This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Welcome, everybody. Rack Addicts After Hours time once more. Episode 58. We've nearly escaped the 50s. Quite an exciting one. I think we should actually kick it off. We do have a little bit of bad news to deliver. Pete, I know that you've eyed up Schwaemann products before and you're a fan in general, but it's my unfortunate duty to inform our listeners that Vove Schwaemann has passed away at the age of 70, 71, I believe. Really important figure in the world of modular, with some of the really tip-top kind of quality modules and offerings. They've been admired the world over since the inception of the company. So a big loss for the modular community. And obviously our thoughts are with the friends and family of the Schwaemanns. And hopefully there'll be a continuation of the legacy in the future. We'll see how that goes. And from sad news into the normal podcasty bit. Well, what have we been up to? On my end, I've been staring at James Hoffman's coffee videos once more. I think I recommended his YouTube channel at the end of a podcast a long time ago. Very thorough reviews and tutorials and the like. The allure of home espresso is peeking around my corner again. I did pop out for a little bit of a walk today and grabbed a takeaway espresso from the local, and it was fine, but when I go to coffee shops, I normally go for kind of a pour-over type thing. I like that. I keep knocking my pop filter. What am I like? I enjoy the almost tea-like experience of a filter coffee, and unfortunately, my coffee nerdery has brought me to the point where I feel like I can do better than most cafes, so more often than not, I'm disappointed. So apparently, my brain wants me to go and try and do that with home espresso as well. Unfortunately, that's quite a difficult, or more likely expensive, pursuit for most people, due mostly to the fact, obviously, espresso machines are expensive, but a lot of people don't take into account that you do need a very capable grinder as well. You need to grind very fine, and consistency in the size of coffee particles is key, and unfortunately that's quite expensive. On the coffee machine, the espresso machine half, you have a couple of options. You can go for the standard boiler type thing where, you know, it's be plugged into the mains, may even be plumbed into your water system, plumbed in, you know what I mean? It may be plumbed in, and it's fairly automatic. It will do its own heating, it will build the pressure in some kind of boiling chamber. The other main category would be manual machines where you add your own hot water from a kettle off the boil, and then you use your arms, your limbs, and your strength to create the pressure yourself using some kind of mechanical advantage lever system. The one that's caught my eye is the Rock espresso machine. That's an English creation, so, you know, support your local, and it may not be too difficult to get hold of it, given the current shipping and handling excitement that's going on around here. But, yeah, that's what I've been thinking about. Been thinking about coffee a lot.
It's a shame. I mean, I like coffee, but unfortunately it doesn't like me back. So it's off the menu, if I can say. Mm. It's a beverage I can very rarely indulge in.
Is it just the caffeine content, or is it just the whole thing?
I have tried decaffeinated, but that sort of takes half the joy out of it. It didn't seem to really improve it. I haven't really nailed it down, because I'm not into black coffee or anything like that. I do like it with cream. I especially like the frothy milk. And I have contemplated, I still most probably potentially buy one of those milk frothing machines. One of the ones where it high pressure steam via the stainless steel tube actually directly into the milk. And I'm sure I could do other beverages such as hot chocolates and so forth.
Oh, that would be a luxurious hot chocolate for sure.
Yes. You can finish it off with sprayed cream and sprinkles.
I agree with the sprinkles, definitely marshmallows, but I'm not a squirty cream man.
Not a squirty cream man.
No, sadly not. Actually, the first anniversary gift I think my partner got me was a little electric milk frothery thing. It's made by the people who do the Nespresso bits. It's does the heating and has a little whizzer inside. It works really well, actually. Most of the time, you do need a full-on espresso machine with one or two boilers to have that steam wand, which is not ideal if you don't want to, you know, use up a good amount of countertop. So those little whizzy things work quite well. Yeah, I go for black coffee most of the time. In fact, I might tell the story of how I got into coffee if I haven't already, because it always amuses me telling it anyway. I don't know if anybody else finds it funny. But I was doing a course in live sound production-y type stuff in Dublin Castle in London in my gap year, which it was good fun. But it was Sunday, starting at 8, and I was in Kent at the time, so about an hour and a half train on that new fast line. Was it 40 minutes? Either way, train, and I was working at a pub at the time, so and this pub sort of turned into a nightclub on the weekends. So I had lots of Saturday double shifts where I'd get home at maybe 5 in the morning and then have to get to London for 8:30 or something. So it was by necessity I ended up falling into the coffee shop directly opposite and just going, oh, just double espresso, just kill me. And I think I sort of forced myself to like coffee that way. And then genuinely began to enjoy it later.
Sort of got past the bitter taste. Well, it's not supposed to taste bitter, is it?
If it's good, it has that perfect balance of bitter, bit of sweet, and that acidity all at the same time. And that's the difficult part. My dad actually has a good test for any coffee shop to see if they'll cut the mustard. Is he'll ask for a macchiato. Or if he's been to Italy recently, he'll unfortunately sort of imitate the accent a bit and say, macchiato, and it's really awkward and weird. He's like, no, you're English, what are you doing? Anyway, he'll ask for a macchiato, and that normally is single or double espresso and just a very thin layer of the nice foam on top, so you can kind of drink the espresso with just a bit of foamy milk. Just takes the edge off and sweetens it up a smidge, and it's really nice. It's one of my favorite ways to go. But oftentimes you'll end up with a very small flat white where they just pour some milk in, there's foam on the top, and it's just ruined. So if you like your espressos, that's a fun way of challenging a local coffee shop to see if they actually know what they're on about.
So basically at the end of the day, you've developed a coffee habit from that experience.
Yes. That's how it happened. Now, like I said, I mean, in the pour over world, so it's much more of a subtle experience rather than the full on short punchy kind of world that espresso is. But I do like both, so I'll tackle the coffee world from both sides. Yeah, I mean, that's all I've been doing. Literally thinking about coffee for an entire week and doing absolutely nothing else. What about you, Pete? What have you been up to?
A couple of things I wanted to mention. Briefly, one of the things I was doing yesterday was having a good play with one of the new release MS-20 full size.
Ah, so how have you had that?
Already got one back, apparently, with a fault. Not that I could find a fault with it. Yes.
Oh, right.
So according to the RMA, the sample and hold wouldn't trigger the filter.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you can actually do that is via the patch bay on the right. So I thought the easiest thing to do is that I don't know if they actually ship it. I didn't see it in the box, but if you go onto the Korg website, you can see there's a kind of patch manual which gives you lots of patching suggestions, and there was exactly the one I wanted to, whereby they were using sample and hold against the.
Yes. Kind of random filter modulation.
The filter cutoff, yeah. So I did that and it worked perfectly. So I don't know what. As we know, we get lots of things returned. And
it could be the old buyer's remorse, let's find an excuse.
Possibly. It's a lot of monies for something that if you don't know what it's going to be, you might be quite disappointed with it. Because, although it's brand new and it's got USB and it's got MIDI, effectively it is a 45-year-old synth. Pretty much
with the now unpopular pitch scaling.
Yeah, so I mean, I thought it was quite a nice thing. It was one of the blue, and I didn't realize
how did that look.
Well, I didn't realise that they're slightly metallic as well, so it was a bit glittery. But it was generally a nice thing, you know. It was well made, you know. It's
the keyboard feel a lot better than the Mini, because the keyboard on the Mini is just gross.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I would have to say the keyboard, but it was okay. But you know what Korg keyboards can be like.
Well, they've only just figured out how Aftertouch works with that new big wave state, haven't they?
It does seem that way. The other thing that was bugging me, in fact, why we had to cancel last night's podcast and reconvene today, was that my daughter required her driver's side headlamp bulb changing.
Yeah,
now this doesn't
that one.
Seem particularly dramatic. She's actually gone along to Halfords, and for our US listeners, Halfords is a auto parts spares type of store, a chain store that we have all around the UK, and they also offer minor maintenance things like
wiper blades and brake lights,
and that type of thing. And she purchased the bulb and asked them to install it for her. And they lifted the bonnet and took one look and said, "No, thank you, on your way." And she, and she was quite desperate to get it done because she basically commutes early in the morning and quite late in the evening. So both times it's dark, especially this time of year when we've got very short days and very long nights. And so I agreed to attempt the changing of the bulb, or the said bulb, myself, which turned into a bit of saga. And it kind of feeds into, we've often had a conversation about good design or bad design and so forth. And I'm almost suspicious the designers did it deliberately. It was ridiculous because you had to start dismantling parts of the engine to get to the...
the engine.
Yes.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Well, nothing dramatic. I mean, we're talking about air boxes and that sort of thing and hoses.
Yeah.
And so, but they had to be dismantled and removed.
Yeah, obscuring other pieces so you can't remove one without, you know, a sequence of five other things beforehand.
And
I
it
imagine.
Was a real trauma. I mean, basically, even once I dismantle everything, you're just getting your hand physically in the right position and trying to get it into the where the receptacle that's holding the bulb was. I think it took an hour, and it was quite frustrating. We're doing this in sort of I don't know what temperature it was last night. It's dark.
Oh, you're outside.
Yeah, it's raining. It's I don't know, 1 or 2 degrees.
That's not an ideal way.
No,
to
it wasn't great. It wasn't great, and you definitely and you know, you're trying to change this halogen bulb. You don't want to touch. You don't want to be touching the glass because obviously if you get sort of oil or any sort of residue from your fingers. So you know, at least I had sort of gloves, but you've got to wear very thin gloves because you can't feel what's going on. I'm getting cold, and I'm getting quite hangry. You know, that I hadn't eaten by that stage. So, yeah, that was my evening, and hence why I had to sort of beg your indulgence and say, look, can we postpone the podcast?
Well, it's not like I was going to be anywhere else.
No, but just thought I'd better explain what was going on.
Yeah, I don't envy you on that one. It does not sound...
No, I've always had this aversion.
Even if it was dry.
I think it stems from when I was younger, when I was... much younger, and I first indulged with in those days motorcycling and so forth, and I always found myself mechanicking either outside or in a very cold, dark garage, and I've developed a sort of general dislike. It's not like I have the facility of a nice heated mechanicking environment with you know, a lift that you can lift the car up on, or anything like that, or even a pit.
Or at least one of those little skateboardy tray things that they
like.
Yeah,
and that would be absolute luxury to be able to do it. So it's always, you know, when I'm required to do something, it always seems to be outside in the dark, in the cold, and it's
the worst possible conditions.
Yeah, a tinge of nightmarishness.
Totally. Well, glad that's over, and
so
more
am I.
Importantly, glad that your evening is now podcasting. Hooray! Let's jump into the news section. I will go first, if I may, just because I think it's much less interesting, the one that I have. Sonicware. Ooh, that was a bit of a sibilant S. Something going on. Oh, hi, Chris. Anyway, Sonicware, a company from Japan that you may not know. I haven't seen their stuff around. You know how tends to work with the power of, I'm doing my air quotes here, online influencers, especially on YouTube. You know, Arturia will send a micro freak to everybody on when they're releasing something new, and invariably, if you subscribe to a lot of these channels, your subscription box becomes inundated with the same video multiple times, which is annoying. That doesn't seem to have happened with the Sonicware guy, so I haven't seen a lot of these, but their first one, at least I believe it was the first one, is the ELZ-1. I remember when it was announced, people were going, ooh, is this an OP-1 killer for a third of the price? It wasn't a third of the price at the time, because the OP-1 was cheaper, but anyway. 500 quid, it's sort of a groove boxy, multiple synthesizery. I think it can do some sampling stuff. It's nowhere near as compact as an OP-1, but it's a similar sort of form factor, just scale it up a bunch of times. Interesting device. I guess it sounds fine, but it really hadn't caught on to the extent that actually there's going to be a lot of quite obscure synths that nerds like us would know about that have caught on more than these. Anyway, that was the first synth. Then there was the Liven 8-bit Warps, bit of a mouthful of a name, the Sonicware Liven 8-bit Warps. So that's an 8-bit groove boxy type thing, still lots of synthesizer stuff going on, lots of sequencing, really small form factor. This one was I have the figure here of 18,000 yen, which is about 126 quid. Cool little thing. Again, I haven't seen a lot of it. They don't seem to have caught on a massive amount, but now there is the Liven XFM, so it's an FM version of the Groovebox that they had with the 8-bit one. So with the 8-bit and the this new FM, they're kind of doing that same thing that Korg's doing, you know, same chassis and multiple different flavors in a nice form factor. I have seen the sort of the trailer for it, and it's one of those annoying ones where the company has made it, and you can't quite tell if it's a demo using the sounds from the thing, or if they just made a track and made this glitzy visual. I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know how it sounds, but if you like the idea of an FM groove box, that's something that you should get on your radar, and then maybe wait for some more videos, bits and pieces. It's got, you know, it's got filters, it's got effects, it's got lots of arpeggiating sequencing type options. It's going to be cheaper than the Electron model Cycles. So potentially something, if you're in that kind of market, maybe hold off and have a quick look. It looks like an interesting thing, but we'll have to wait for some more videos. Just thought we should let you know. Now, more interestingly, from a bigger company that everybody knows, Make Noise have a new entry into the no coast, the O coast, the no control, the O control form factor. Pete, you've had a good listen. What's the crack, as they say in some places?
Well, it's quite avant-garde sounding, but I suppose that goes with the O control and even the O coast. It's following along in the same line. I mean, I'm almost sort of thinking the three units now are sort of it's a bit like the Moog offering, isn't it? When you've got the Mother 32 and you've got the D-Flam, and now and then you've got the subharmonica, which make quite a nice trio when they're all together. And
yeah, I think I was saying to you the other day, I just wish Make Noise had a similar kind of tiered thing, so you could have a nice neat
This is system. I was a bit I wasn't really sure. I thought it was an effects processor, and it is, but it's also a sort of sound generating device in its own right.
Yeah,
but it is very experimental sounding, let's put it politely like that.
Droney experimentally, I think, is the kind of combo.
So it's in sort of a collaboration between Make Noise and Alexandro Cortini, and I was saying to you, I believe he's something to do with Nine Inch Nails, but I'm not really sure.
That's all I know, something to do with Nine Inch Nails at least.
And he does a video on it himself, and he explains that basically it exemplifies what he likes to do with sound design or that type of thing. It's a bit droney, a bit echoey, a bit squeaky in parts. It's interesting, and it certainly makes a nice, interesting accompaniment with the other two units.
Yeah, I mean, from the little look I had. There's a Sonic State video where Nick is talking to Alessandra, I think. It appeared to me that the echoey bit was kind of a delay, multiple stagey type delay that got quite glitchy, as far as I know.
Yeah, I mean, it's got multiple kind of capacitive touch type pads arranged in various places, so it's like sort of almost like CV inserts, but for your finger.
Yeah.
So you could.
It's like the what's the landscape all flesh. You heard of those?
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
They're pretty fun. Imagine a little 3.5mm jack.
Oh yeah, I didn't recall the name, but I know exactly the ones because Thonk do them.
Mm. Yeah, so it's just got some of those.
They literally are capacitive touch, but they actually insert into CV points.
Yeah, and you can just kind of put them wherever, which is a fun idea.
Yeah, I just hadn't recalled what they were called. They were just those thingies.
Yeah. Okay, here's a thought. If we're going with the Moog versus Make Noise little system ecosystem analogy, let's also assume that Moog are going to release the Spectravox in a production unit, because they said they wouldn't, but they also said they wouldn't release the Subharmonicon, so it could happen. So that way we've got a four part ensemble. On Moog front, we've got a nice straightforward monosynth, a strange but not massively strange percussion synth, an interesting chordal something with also some cool sequencing. Obviously, there's a good sequencer in the Mother 32, and then a vocoder. On the Make Noise side, we've got pretty weird monosynth, the West Coast variety instead, an interesting sequencer that only sequences, and now droney, soundscapey something. Assuming there is a fourth entry into Make Noise's system, what do you reckon they could do, or they would be likely to do, and what would you round out that trio with?
Difficult to say, because you can never really tell what Make Noise is going to come up with, because they tend to very much lean to the West Coast style, and you can almost look at them, because I mean Moog was always regarded as the East Coast synth sounds, and Buchla being the West Coast, and you could almost think that Make Noise, although they're not on the West Coast physically, but they're leaning towards that that sort of genre, if you could say in those sort of terms. So you could almost look at it as a kind of modern Buchla type esque thing. So I have no idea what they would come up with. I mean, it's difficult. Okay. I mean, I like the being surprised element.
Yeah, that is always good. But let's still try and predict, because that's always fun. Let's use the Buchla framework. The features of would be low pass gates and complex oscillator. That's done. That's in the no coast. Strange sequencing potentially, not necessarily a.
Well, the O control covers all the sequencing. It's so flexible. I'm seriously thinking about getting on it. But now I think you're almost sort of you have to get all three, and it's quite a purchase. That ends up being quite an expensive synth.
Yeah, I mean, just as expensive as the Moog offering at the moment,
certainly.
As well.
So they're on a par financially.
Definitely. What would you say is the next point of Buchla? I suppose there's the source of uncertainty, which is just a general randomness kind of thing. You do have a stepped random voltage in the no coast, but you don't have like a full woggle bug, for example.
Maybe something that's a bit like, have they got a function generator in it? Is there a function generator of a sort?
There's
in
a simple like one, like not even half a maths, but like a one loop.
Is that, I was going to say, some sort of maths, like something that contains something that's maths like, possibly. Or maybe something that's more sample based, not, I mean, like Morphogene or the.
Ooh, that's a shout. Because it would have to be a standalone option, although I guess the no control kind of isn't, but you can use it with loads of stuff. Maybe, yes. Ooh, a standalone sampley something that's vaguely Morphogene-y, Mimeophone-y, something. That would be the most compelling of the three if they did something, of the four, if they made something.
Potentially
like that,
give
personally.
You the opportunity to input sort of found sounds or bits of speech, vocals, that type of thing, and add that to the mix.
They could put a built-in microphone like the Instruo Arbor has. That's the Instruo sort of granular module, so you can feed audio into it, but having the, it's got a little condenser microphone in the panel, which is really neat. Ooh, now I'm thinking. Can't make noise, do it for me. I've never owned a make noise thing.
Yeah, I've got quite a few of the sort of conventional,
as long as they're silver.
Yeah, the silver fronted ones, most of the, all the standards, you know, the, you know, the analog oscillators, the I've got most of the standard effects, the reverb and the Epiphone and so forth. Definitely got Mass. I mean, everywhere you read,
you can't not.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, I never did, but whatever.
And a few other bits and pieces. The Wobble Bug, which is essential, which is, that's a very old design. I believe that's a 1970s design.
Yeah. Was that Grant Richter?
I'm not sure.
Could be. I know there's the Richter Woggle Bug is a module. I think that was an early Make Noise one. Maybe he adapted the design for Make Noise. I don't know. Maybe we should actually look it up at some point. But no, there's a couple of good videos on that Make Noise Strega. You should definitely go check them out to get your ears around it. See what you reckon, audience members. Right. Let's jump into our second section, or third section. Third section. I can count. I swear I've been to school. 2021 wish list, shopping list.
2021 shopping list.
Indeed.
So you were saying that you've got the love back, and
not completely, but it's happening. I know.
You can feel it. You can feel it building.
Yeah.
So what is on your shopping list, if I may ask?
So if we're going the synthy musical, well, let's go for music tech as a whole. That's a good category. I was obviously speaking to you earlier on the WhatsApp, Pete. The Order of the 7B shall soon be on the way. So that's just the microphone done.
Well, it just sounds like, I mean, that's just an investment.
It's an investment. It's kind of, it's not a necessity. I think, no, inevitability is, I think, is probably the better the better way to describe it. You know, it will just be right. So that's very early in 2021. Well, I mean, very soon in 2021. The other part of the system that needs upgrading, in inverted commas, as always, I don't have really a serious proper interface. I'm borrowing our ex-colleague and good friend James's ID14 at the moment, and audience stuff sounds great, works perfectly. One option consideration is, I mean, I do like Universal Audio stuff. I have used their bits in the past, and while I enjoy the plugins, what I do really, really like is the guitar amplifiers. So while I do play guitar, and actually I've been playing quite a bit of guitar over the last week, which is awesome news. I wish I could tell Telmo today, but I don't have an amp or anything. I don't have any simulation stuff at the moment. It's just plugins. And when I last had I was borrowing Universal Audio Interface, the Friedman HBE model was just perfect for what I needed, so I used it all the time. So I'd have to check on the DSP needs, but a solo, while when we're in the shop, we always try and really qualify with our customers how much they might be using the plugins, because it's so limited on DSP. If it can run that single amp, jobs are good, really. The only other thing I'll be doing is this, podcasts. So, you know, just one of the preamp models, maybe a compressor, and that's all it would need to do. So I could probably get away with the solo. I love the portability, and I've got Thunderbolt 3 on my Mac that I do recording and things on. So it would be a great option. But we shall see. We shall see. Maybe I'll see if I can borrow James's one. I think he's got a solo. We'll see what we can do. So the more exciting area of that, and the more fun and definitely not necessary corner, would be the synth world. I've been mulling this one over, discussing it with my ModCaf colleagues. We had a good hangout last week on Zoom. we were chatting about this, I have been back on the most dangerous of websites, Modular Grid, and I'm actually just going to pull my account up because I honestly can't remember what I've got in here. The plan, Stan, would be to build up a system again using my, I guess, 3 years. Was I into Modular for 3 years before I bailed out again? Something like that. So it's sort of a from zero to hero and back to zero again. You wrap up that experience, the tracks I actually made, and the fun I most definitely had. Think about where all that came from, what I really enjoyed using, and really focus on that. So, Subharmonicon, joy to use, that's in there. Of course, it's here with me. I'll just put it in a case because I like having it near other modular things. I'm really big into my hands-on sequences. I've said many a time I hate menus. There are some that I will live with, for example, the Digitax. Once you get around them, they're good to live with. They're functional. They work. But there's things like the Turing machine, which I just love. So easy and surprising. Turing machine and a good quantizer, that will always work for me. So those are kind of early on, and of course, easily DIYable, those. So those would be great. The Behringer big old thingy, what's it? 960, that's the number. That's the big old Moog-style sequencer. At the Shippity Shop, we should have some of those coming in middle of this month. It's February as we record this. And I should be going back in for some videos to get some demos made. And that will give me enough time to get my greasy mitts on said sequencer and see if it's for me. That's something quite exciting.
And that's going to be it's going to be all right for compatibility. It's going to work well with other
terms of other voltages and stuff. Yeah. It should be fine.
So you were saying that there was the strange...
That's the triggers. And in a well-thought-out system or a competent system, it really doesn't matter because it just amounts to changing the polarity of something. So if you've got just a nice, easy inverter or an attenuverter somewhere, you've solved the issue.
Solved the problem.
That's all it is.
Okay.
And sometimes a gate delay, depending on how it's working. But yeah, we'll see what the build quality is like, see how I enjoy using it. That's definitely something I'm looking forward to getting stuck in with. The next bit that's a little bit more difficult to nail down lies in the recording-y sampling area of modular. So my adventure in that kind of corner started with the radio music, the music thing one, which is another super simple module. It's just so easy to use and just always worked. When I did a lot of the sort of my early field recordings, I just made a loopable section of it, chucked it on an SD card and just left it in the modular all the time. So I had lots of weather recordings, some samples of my sister reading some classical literature on there, and I use them all the time. You'll find them quite a lot over the EP Galactic Bathtub, which will soon be available on all major streaming platforms. Galactic Bathtub by Robert Rhodes Music. Anyway, that was great fun. Chuck it through something like the Crush Delay by Bafaco, mangle some samples, just have a nice ambience, some rain. I used it all the time, so that's going. But the trickier half will be, we've mentioned Morphogene. That's in the rack at the moment as I'm looking at it, but it's more, do I want something that can do sort of looping? So Morphogene can do that, of course, but so can the Magneto and the Lubad from Instruo. Do I want something that also does some granular? So we've got Qubits Nebulae, we've got Clouds, we've got Instruo Arbor. The Mimeophone is in there as well because it's kind of a delay but also super weird. It's that textural, spacey, sampley thing that unfortunately I think I need hands-on to know what I want to do.
So nothing really sort of exotic like a 1010 Bitbox or something like that, or the Bitbox Mark II, I should say.
That would be a great, as a utilitarian, I need my drums, I need to record and edit samples. But having the Digitax for a good while, I never really used it for that. I didn't really do any make something in the modular, sample it into the Digitax, chop it up, make something else with it. The sampling I did was more performance-based, so when I borrowed our good friend and ex-colleague Nick Cohen's Clouds, that was all, you know, freezing and unfreezing stuff that was already going on in the patch, which is something the Morphogene would lend itself to quite well. I just don't know. And unfortunately, the hands-on, ooh, I want to try this out or borrow something from someone, that's not a thing these days. But I'm not rushing into it. So that's kind of the overview. I think this year, at some point in this year, I will have gone modular again.
I see. I mean, you've still got your case, or did you dispose of that as well?
No, it's all gone.
It's all gone. You cleanse yourself absolutely, 100%.
I tell a lie. There is. I'm pretty sure there were some modules I didn't shift in the end, but I can't actually remember. Excuse me while I just escape my duvet studio prison.
Okay. You've left exit stage left.
Yep. For listeners who don't understand the strange noises that were going on, I'm currently trapped between three mic stands and a tripod that are supporting a duvet to try and mitigate the echoes. And the seating arrangement isn't easy to extract oneself
from. It doesn't look as extreme as it did last week. It's not like you were sort of lurking beneath it. It's just sort of...
I was buried in it last time. So here's the X-modular baggie, I guess. I've got a pair of Grado SR60 eyes from the 80s. Those aren't modular. What are they doing in there? Okay, I've got some flying bus cable, power cables. I've got a small attenuator with a switch that I made. What's in there? What an adventure into Ben's miscellaneous modular box. So there's some knurlies in there. I thought there was a module or two in here.
Generally not a lot, basically. You really did shed the lot, didn't you? It was like sloughing off skin.
ABY. Power cables.
Ooh.
I've still got my... I have a little clip-on contact mic with a quarter-inch jack. Okay, no, I tell a lie. I don't actually have any modules left. It has all gone. So, yeah, nothing, really.
So start from scratch, so case, yeah. And then from there on. So what are you thinking in respect to cases?
That is the question. So in terms of cost-effectiveness and they just work ability... is the dope for low cost cases. You know, they're affordable, they stack well, they're kind of cheap looking wood, so you can easily screw bits into them and who cares. So those are on the thing. Probably the 3-row first, they're all 84 HP. Then, though it is less cost effective for the base, the angled base, yeah. I just love that look, so I'd have to do that. Assuming I outgrow the 3 rows that quickly, but we'll see. And I do want to do as much DIY as I can, because I do miss doing that. It's great fun.
Well,
nice meditative.
You're
going
to have plenty of time on your hands, because things aren't getting.
Oh yes,
things aren't changing much.
Maybe upgrade the soldering situation. Maybe tackle something like that Euclidean circles that you'd been eyeing up as well.
Yeah.
I do miss that. That's a brilliant little sequencer.
Well, I still haven't got a email that was promised from the designer. I can't remember the gentleman's name. And
about Euclidean circles.
Yeah. Whether he had any circuit boards and kits available.
Yeah.
I mean, you can buy it ready built, and I could have bought the. I can't remember the company's name in the US where I bought the...
SynthCube?
That's the ones. So SynthCube in the US had version 2 kits on offer recently. But I'm thinking, you know, once you get it over here, you've got VAT, import tax to pay, and the whole rest of it. And I didn't know how economic it was. And I've still got...
And about 250 squidlies new, a bit more maybe.
And I've still got a pile of kits to... that I haven't even sort of gone near, so it just go on the pile most probably.
Well, there we go. I've rambled for a good long while. What about your 2021
list? Okay, it's a bit more definitive. So starting the first thing in the line, I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but it will be the Moog Matriarch. Excellent. So that's the first thing. But the second thing, and I was quite interested in this, but I tend to defer until these products become available because there's no point in spending 6 months or 9 months sort of lusting over something that you can't really get your hands on. So the second one, and it's a definite, will be an Arturia Polybrute.
Is that because you've met one, or
no? I've watched
videos
some videos. I mean, in fact, what came up, there's a gentleman who is a producer, and I've subsequently lost the page that I came across, and he was playing some demos, but he was talking, and the way he was doing it as well, it was very arty because he was using a reverb on his voice. So he, even though he was doing a sort of a piece to camera, it's all very ethereal. And he was expressing that he's heavily into modular as well, but he was expressing that it's the most excited he'd been for a synthesizer. And I can starting to understand why. It really is a remarkable piece of equipment.
Was it Ben Jordan by any chance?
It could have been. Is he, American
the thumbnail for that is him playing the thing with like a galaxy behind him. So given the reverb on the voice, that seems likely.
Quite possibly. Is he looks like he's bathed in purple light by any chance?
Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely the one.
Yeah, so Ben Jordan, Ben with two N's.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out later because I do want to listen to it again. I've always thought the Mod Matrix on, well, the what's it called? Matrix Brute, so well thought out because it's just so easy and clear.
Yeah, so
and
this thing seems to be, it's the two contrasting things. It can do really soft and ambient, and it can do really hard and punchy, and so can this. So, I'm really quite excited about this. I'm more excited than the Moog. I mean, you know, the Matriarchs have been around for quite some time. You know, we know what they are, and primarily the Matriarch is going to be used as a sort of oversized controller for
the front
for the modular.
End for the Moth.
Yeah. So those are the two synths for 2021 that I shall be purchasing, and then we go on to a few other sort of smaller pieces. So definitely a Strymon Night Sky. In fact, I nearly grabbed one the other day. I'm still teetering, but I do want to get my hands on one. It's a very interesting reverb unit. I mean, again, a lot of commentators have said it's almost like a synth in its own right with the amount of level of control. But I think it's the sort of thing that you could plug most things in and get quite some interesting stuff out of. So
yeah, well, you've got the full size Strifecta already, haven't you?
Well, I haven't got all three. I've got the two. I've got the Blue Sky, and I've got the Timeline.
The Mobius.
I didn't go for the sort of flangey modulation type of thing.
You'll have the amended Strifecta then.
Yeah. So, and if the other, I sort of see them as pairs. So if I got the Night Sky, the other one I'd potentially be interested in getting would be the Volante, because it's sort of a tape echo type thing. That might be a nice match for the Night Sky. Those two units as a pair. Might be a bit overkill, to be honest.
You can never have too much ambience. It's a fact.
As I said earlier, I'm seriously quite interested in the O-Control because it is an interesting sequencer. You know, the variety that you can get with it and the way that you can patch it into itself. And I, again, re-watched I can never remember, Mylar Melodies.
I always thought his demo was really
video
good.
Video was very explanatory on it, and he's the gentleman that's responsible for me spending lots of money over the last few years because of the many and varied videos he's put up. And finally, something that we spoke about last year's NAMM, that I'm sort of my interest has reawakened, is the Supercritical synthesizers. It's the Diamond Core Oscillator. So the one with the 16...
That doesn't ring any bells. I'm going to have a quick Google.
It's a 16 oscillator unit, and you can either have them in sort of various sort of unison modes, or there's an adapter and you can have it running polyphony.
Supercritical, was it the Demon Core?
Yeah.
I have vaguely come across this before.
It's quite an expensive thing.
It's subtle in looks, at least. It doesn't really shout about how much is going on in there.
I think if you go all in for the oscillator and the expander, you're nearly into £700.
Oh, yeah, on the little thing on the Sound on Sound website, we're talking 415 for the oscillator on its own, expander 237.
Yeah, you're into your new, you know,
chunk.
Yeah,
that's a while ago as well.
Yeah, it's a few quid for basically an oscillator, but it's quite unique in the way it sounds. It can really, if you want those sort of unison type of sounds, it's as fat as you want in that respect, and then the polyphony sounds quite good as well. So that'd be quite a nice thing to have in modular.
Yeah. Though single output, though, so technically it'll be paraphonic, won't it?
But that's what the expander's for.
Well, it's still only a single audio output, though.
Okay. Right. Well, I thought it was stereo, but I could be wrong.
Oh, it could be like a stereo jack or something. So look at these pictures. No, I think it's mono.
Yeah. Mm. So for that money, it'd be stereo. But anyway, it's the fattest thing I've heard in modular.
I do like a good bit of saw, super saw.
Yeah.
That when you get those really good plucky bass lines, something about that little bit of detune just gives it. Actually, what's really cool is when you get the super square and it has that really cool hollow type sound. That's really fun. Paired with a good bass line, which is something I could never really write, but still. Sorry, I got distracted. I was just reading the Sound on Sound article there. Right. That's quite a list. Quite a list, that one.
Yeah.
Right. We must jump into the end section that I can never remember the name of, where we say things about stuff that happen on the internet. And of course, I'm not prepared, as always. That's the theme for this last bit of the Rack Addicts After Hours podcast. So, Pete, have you got the thing that we talk about at the end of the show lined up all ready to go?
The multimedia recommendation thingy.
Mm,
yes, I've got one, and it's not YouTube for once.
For the first time, ladies and gentlemen, Pete's not on YouTube.
Right, this week I'd want to let everyone know, if they don't already know, about a new documentary series of six programs coming from the producer Adam Curtis. And for those who don't know who Adam Curtis is, he's a producer that's worked extensively, certainly with the BBC, for a good couple of decades. And he has produced a series of very interesting documentaries over the last, certainly throughout the noughties and the sort of the 21st century, let's say, the last 20 years. And some of these are in short form in the respect that they're sort of half an hour, maybe an hour. And then he's done a couple of really long form ones that have been almost a couple of hours each. And I regard them as almost art pieces as well. He's particularly chooses really interesting music from sort of avant-garde ambient to sort of punk to all sorts of stuff. Quite often with his documentaries, he will make a point verbally. He's discussing something or laying out the story that he's trying to tell, and he's got all the video reference material. But then he will just let the video speak for himself and then utilize music to sort of carry on the theme to try and reinforce the message he was trying to impart in that particular section. It's totally different to any type of documentary format that I've come across before. This particular series of six programs, which are going to be released on the BBC iPlayer, and I do apologize to our American listeners, although if you utilize a VPN, you should be able to get hold of or get access to the iPlayer. Well, anyway, the current series, which is going to be available in the iPlayer during February, is entitled, let me get to it, Can't Get You Out of My Head. So in this, he's endeavouring, I believe, to explain the global psychosis that we find ourselves in at the moment, something that's built up over the last, certainly the last 20 years, and sort of very much while we've had the internet. A lot of his stories try to explain not necessarily the human condition, but the social condition that we find ourselves in, especially in the West. But this particular series is going to deal with not just the circumstances of how we are in the West at the moment. It looks at Russia, it looks at China, and so forth. As I say, he's trying to get into the psyche of the where we find ourselves today. So he starts looking at the phenomena of modern conspiracy theories, but tries to he'll research it going back through history. One of the interesting things that he has access to is all the BBC archives for all the news coverage that they've done literally going back to the Second World War. But he will typically utilise the stuff that they weren't or didn't choose to use, the stuff that went onto the cutting room floor, let's say. And sometimes the stuff wasn't really family viewing, the stuff that you know, when they were covering wars, they do sort of sanitise it a little bit. And he'll actually, he doesn't over egg it at all, but he will show things that are a bit disturbing, but they are there to reinforce a particular message. Some of his work that I think might even be available on YouTube for those who cannot access the iPlayer. There's also a website called Thought Maybe, and I think it's www.thoughtmaybe.com. Anyway, so but certainly the long form videos that he's done, and the first one is called Bitter Lake, which examines the relationship between the world and oil, all the sort of consequences of that in all its various shades. And then the second one, the long form he did, was called Hypernormalization, which looks at the techniques that have been used by various sort of political figures and governments around the world, and sort of feeds into the sort of disinformation and fake news type of arena. But it's a very interesting take on it, and he doesn't, I wouldn't say necessarily take sides, it's almost like a abstracted view from elsewhere, from above. But again, on top of it, it's the way all these documentaries are laid out. As I say, the music's great. Sometimes they need more than one watch. As I say, because they're sort of almost like art pieces that you have to... I mean, I found myself with the long-form ones, watching them in segments and sort of, you know, you can either take it
digest
them in various starts. You can sort of let the sort of message of what he's trying to portray, the story, because as I say, they're all very story-based. And he makes a lot of them, in a lot of cases, because he's using sort of archive material, he builds up this sort of narrative that feeds in. And, you know, it sort of will knit together a load of what seemingly seem to be unrelated events, but he shows how they're all connected over a period of sometimes years or even decades. But, they're all worth a watch. But particularly, as I say, I'm quite excited about this new series that he's doing. And again, that will be available exclusively on the BBC iPlayer during the month of February.
Nice one. Once more on the chap's name again.
Adam Curtis.
Yeah, I think from your description of the kind of style of his pieces, I think, in fact, I'm pretty sure you've told me about him before.
Yeah, I mean, he's done...
I still think I haven't got around to watching any of them, though.
He's worked heavily with Massive Attack.
Oh, yeah.
And other similar type of artists. So he doesn't just utilize certain artists' music. He actually forms relationships with them, and I don't know if they particularly write pieces for him, but he certainly, you know, he doesn't just sort of grab their music out of the library. He has a sort of a working relationship with a lot of these artists, or seemingly.
Nice one. Maybe I'll even consider paying for a TV license to use the iPlayer, or not, maybe.
Do you not have a television at all?
Nope.
Well, I suppose that's one way out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't. You only need a TV license if you're watching anything live or BBC funded or whatever.
Well, technically, you need one even for the radio.
I don't listen to the radio either.
Fair enough. I mean, they would have everybody have one, whether you had a computer or a TV or what these days. I mean, it's difficult to say. I mean, the government was talking about decriminalising the not having a licence, but they don't seem to have done that.
No, they haven't. Anyway, to my recommendation, if you are of the board game persuasion... I think I'm increasingly heading that way, given my, I don't know, that more recently video games and I haven't got on as well as we have in the past, mostly an attention span thing, or new games not grabbing me, so the only thing I actually enjoy is the old stuff that I already know, so I just won't stop playing Skyrim, you know how it is. Anyway, board games. I found a review channel, because I'm you know, trying to look for something good for the partner and I. So a couple of two players. I do want to pick up a co-op board game because I've never actually done that before. So I'm looking into reviews, as you do, and came across one channel that's fairly new, so not too many videos on there yet, but I really like the style, and they're very thorough. There's a little bit of demo, there's the critique as well. Really good stuff. This is Tabletop Dungeon. It's one gent whose name I can't remember and couldn't find while I briefly looked. But, you know, he just does board game reviews. The one that's grabbed me most recently and that I'm interested in, but unfortunately is currently not really available anywhere because I think a reasonably limited run from a new supplier. Anyway, a game called Far Away, which grabbed me because it's an interesting combination of the explore a new world type thing, resource gathering and management, but it also has its own kind of ecosystem building type thing, and one really interesting mechanic, which I'll get into later. Obviously, I haven't played this game because I haven't been able to pick it up, but I really do want to. So Far Away, you're two players. You are both dispatched from some corporation. What is it in Alien? Is it Weyland Yutani or something?
Yeah, Yutani Weyland Corporation.
That's the one. Think that kind of thing. You're chucked on a planet somewhere, and you've got to go and, you know, set up the bases, the basics for a colony. There's a few different missions, things like that. So as you land, you sort of start on one hex, and you sort of build the map, and it's kind of a random system for what kind of lands you might find as you explore. And you'll come across creatures and other natural resources that you've got to use for your goal. But creatures can sort of spawn as you explore. And while there are two players in this game, both players must also play as the creatures. So you have to kind of role play as the creatures. There's no mechanic in the game to decide whether or not they're going to attack the player if you're kind of in adjacent tiles or something. You've got to, if you're a creature, you've got to look at its kind of makeup. Is it a carnivore? Is it a predator? And you've got to figure out, I'm quite close to this. Is this creature going to attack me? And if you think it is, you've got to role play that creature attacking your character. Anyway, exploration, resource management, build the thing, complete the mission. But what I think is really cool is this is a co-op game for two people, and the corporation that has sent you to this planet, Weyland Yutani, maybe, they were too low budget to provide you with ample communication technology. So if you and your partner, your co-op partner, your exploration partner, if you're not on the same hex, you're not allowed to talk to each other. So you're not allowed to strategize, discuss what you're doing or anything, because you're too far away. And there is a loneliness mechanic. So every I think it's like every turn or something that you spend not in the same sort of hex, your loneliness increases. And of course, you have a hunger as well. You can kill creatures and eat them. But your loneliness goes up. If it goes all the way up, you just kind of you get too sad and you start sort of getting debuffed and things like that. I definitely think you should watch the review. Tabletop Dungeon, the game is Far Away. But really interesting sounding board game. I do really want to pick it up if I can find it in stock anywhere at any point. But if you're into the board game kind of world, check out his reviews. They're pretty cool. Tabletop Dungeon. Go for it. You've been much of a board games person before, Pete.
No. Sorry.
Video games for you.
Well, no, I mean, no, as I've said many times, often it's the technology in video games that excites me. I mean, the only thing that's really grabbed me is the VR, because it's everything that I've waited for decades. You know, you're in it. You're actually in the game. Sitting in front of a flat screen, I did get kind of excited about Skyrim when it first came out. Well, that was quite a long time ago, because it was quite, I thought, yeah, that's interesting, but you know, I want to be in it.
Yeah, now you can be.
And now I can be. VR, so, yeah. But as I say, I would like to be slightly fleeter of foot or younger, because it's very physical. It's actually quite exhausting, some of the stuff. But yeah, it's still great.
Indeed. Well, I haven't been too into board games for that long. Another thing that I have been sort of picking up is Cribbage, classic card game, but I've been playing that with my dad over Zoom, which is quite fun, even though we are using separate decks of cards, so there's certain combinations that couldn't exist.
Yeah, how does that work?
We had five aces in one particular round. It's not the point. He just wanted to teach it to me because he used to play it with his dad.
It's quite a novel take, a card game through the internet.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you can't. I've been winning mostly, and
it
probably doesn't count because we haven't got
some
sort of deck.
I suppose poker works because they're all playing. You're playing in the cloud.
Yeah, I mean, there's potentially some kind of technological solution for such a thing.
What you need is cloud-based cribbage.
Exactly, crib in the cloud. It probably exists. I couldn't be bothered to Google for it because I like holding cards.
Yeah, there is a certain something about it. The only thing I resorted to, and we spoke about that, I can't remember, a couple of weeks ago or last week, was the 1,000-piece jigsaw.
Oh yeah,
but this lockdown, I'm struggling to get motivated with anything like that. Mm. I mean, I'm working more. Everyone's locked down more, but busier, with mundane stuff.
Yeah, we're old hats at this stuff now. We know how it works. So
yeah, this lockdown thing.
Yeah, it's a weird world that we live in. So if you are a board game person and have some recommendations, please chuck them on the Rack Addicts Facebook page, Rack Addicts UK. That would be amazing because I would like some recommendations. Do check out some of our recommendations from previous episodes as well if you are running out of things to do. I know I am. But most importantly, tune in. Excuse me for nudging my pop filter once more. Do tune in next week for Rack Addicts 59. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.